Okay, so continuing the Lord's second coming, we're not going to go through all that we went through in Matthew 24. We're going to pick up in verse 15, just a little bit of review before we continue on. We talked last time about the abomination of desolation and how both Matthew and Mark referenced Daniel's prophecy, which is Daniel 9, verse 27. But Luke calls the abomination of desolation the Roman army that surrounds Jerusalem. And so we've dug into that a little more, and the King James Version was a better translation than the New American Standard and other translations, but it's one of the better translations of Daniel 9:27, and talks about the he there is talking about Jesus, who makes a firm covenant for 1 week, which a week could be a week of years. So he 3.5-year ministry, put a stop to the sacrifices, which would have been with his death. He would have put an end to the sacrifices. And on the wing of abomination, in the middle of verse 27 there, shall come one who makes desolate. So the abomination that the Israelites or the Jewish people rejected the Messiah and killed the Son of God, there was going to come one who was going to destroy them. And God sent his army, or the Roman army, to destroy them. And it says, even until complete... until a consummation or a completion is determined, is poured out upon the desolate. So a complete destruction upon those who was going to be made desolate, which was the Jewish people. There. Again, we check this out. You know, Jesus had his earthly ministry for 3.5 years. In the middle of that week of years, the stop of the physical sacrifices of the blood of bulls and goats ceased. You know, the curtain in the temple tore from top to bottom. God left the temple when Jesus died. And so there is no longer a need for the sacrifices of bulls and goats through the Jewish law. And so Jesus put a stop to that, and because they killed him, they rejected the Messiah, the Roman army would come and destroy them. And we even looked at with some other passages in Luke 21, which is part of the passage there. Luke calls those days the days of vengeance that were written about. It was going to be upon the land, which was Israel, and upon the people, which were the Israelites, because they rejected the Messiah. Isaiah prophesied about that complete destruction that was going to be decreed. And then Paul quotes Isaiah in Romans chapter 9, and he's talking about the prophecy of the destruction of the temple and the land. He says, even though the Israelites are like the sand of the sea, just a remnant, just a small part are going to be saved, because there's only a few that are going to believe the Messiah. And so we continued on. Does other scripture conclude this with this conclusion? And like in Luke 19, when Jesus rode into Jerusalem before he was crucified on a donkey, when they were saying, you know, Son of David, Hosanna, Son of David, he cried in Luke 19 because they did not recognize the time of their visitation. And he told them in verses 41 through 44 there, that they were going to reject him and they were end up going to be destroyed. That not one stone will be left upon another. And then it agrees with Matthew 21, where the laborers of the vineyard, now the owner of the vineyard kept sending slaves to collect the produce from those laborers, and they kept killing them or beating them. And he said, well, I'll send my son. And they killed the son. And so the owner of the vineyard, when Jesus asked after that parable, he asked the Pharisees, what will the owner of the vineyard do? And they said, he'll bring the wretches to a wretched end. So the stone that they rejected, which was Jesus, would bring them, they were going to be brought to a wretched end. And then Matthew 22, the next parable in line there, was that they had that invitation, you know, my fattened livestock are all butchered, and come to the wedding feast. And they rejected him. And so in verse 7, it says that the king was going to send his armies and destroy those people and set their city on fire. Because the Jews kept rejecting God, he destroyed them. Any questions on that review before I move on here?
When I was going along in part two, is that Matthew 24 and Luke 13, and Mark 13 and Luke 21, even though Luke talks about the Roman army surrounding the camp, and Matthew and Mark talk about the salvation, they're parallel. I mean, they have the same words in them. They're talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about a different situation. Right. And I think that is one thing that's prominent all the way through the whole verse.
Yeah, the verses before that talk about the gospel going out, and the verses after the where Matthew and Mark call Luke the abomination of desolation, and Luke calls the destruction, the army surrounding Jerusalem, they both, all three of them say, let those who are in Judea flee. You know, hopefully it's not in the Sabbath day. Hopefully it's not during winter. We're kind of going through some of that now. But they follows up with the exact same thing. So looking parallel, and if we honestly look at the parallel, like the Gospels are, you know, for example, there's things, details about when Jesus is on the cross that Luke doesn't have, but Matthew has. Mark has some part of it. John doesn't have all of it. And so you put them together and get the picture. And so it's, they're parallel, talking about the same thing. They're just, they're giving, the words are a little bit different, but they're referencing the same things. And that's the same thing as we continue on here, because it talks about, yes.
Go ahead. Since you asked for questions.
Yeah.
I did have a chance to read a little bit of one of those off the wall that I picked up, but not entirely. But just to clarify, this church isn't a fulfilled eschatology church, though, is it, where you think Jesus already physically came back? And
okay. No. Yeah, and actually...
Because there are people who say that.
Right. Right, so you have your post-millennial and your preterist views are going to be that, and I think, I don't know if we'll quite get to that today, because that's more in verse 29, but no, because they're going to take, well, Jesus coming back was Jesus coming on Israel. Well, the problem is that there's some details about him gathering his people when he talks about that. So he has not returned yet for his people, but we're not premillennialists either. So we don't think that, we think the church is God's bride, is Christ's bride. It's not Israel's nothing special anymore. We're the spiritual Israel, which is the church, is who God is the prophecies are about. So the continuing on then with the abomination of desolation, which was followed up by what's known as the Great Tribulation. And so people are gonna view that as something that still happens in the future a lot of times. Now, one thing, and we've mentioned this before, if you look at Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8, you have two little horns that speak blasphemous words and with big mouths and are arrogant, okay? And so the two little horns, if you look at the little horn in Daniel chapter 7, the little horn comes from the Roman kingdom, okay? Which, you know, I believe to be the office of the Pope, okay, the papacy, okay. The little horn in Daniel chapter 8 comes from the Greek kingdom, which would fit the description of Antiochus Epiphanes, okay. And so just because the term little horn with the big mouth speaking blasphemous words is used does not necessarily mean that it's talking about the same person, okay. So, well, the same thing here at the Great Tribulation. You have a Great Tribulation mentioned in Matthew 24, and we'll talk about that. People are going to tie that over with the Great Tribulation that the saints go through in Revelation, and it's not the same tribulation, okay? And we'll get to that here in a second, why it's not the same, specifically this tribulation, why this tribulation is talking about the time around Jerusalem's destruction in 70 AD. So the abomination of desolation, which was the Roman army, brought a great tribulation, okay? If we look in Matthew 24, verse 21, someone want to read that, please.
But then there will be a great tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will.
Okay, so notice some of those, that language there. There's a great tribulation that has not occurred and never will, nor ever shall again. Okay, basically, I kind of paraphrase a little bit, but turn to Mark 13 there. Mark 13.
Is that good Greek, or is that a good translation?
Yeah, it's a good translation. And so I think the key is understanding because we'll go to Exodus here in a minute, and it'll talk about Egypt having a tribulation. But in verse 19 of Mark 13, if someone wants to read that, please.
For those days will be a time of tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of creation, which God created until now and never will.
Okay, so both Matthew and Mark call it the Great Tribulation. Okay, now if we're honestly paralleling through there, and we're looking at Luke, then Luke's gospel, then let's go over to Luke 21. Now, if you were to say to somebody, you know, and this is not uncommon, okay? So you have on one hand, we have to be smart about when words are used, and we always have to be smart. But words don't always have to mean the same thing if they use the same word. Okay, like the little horn of Daniel 8 and Daniel 7 are different, okay? But also, we also have to use a little bit of wisdom, too, to understand that just because Luke doesn't use the words great tribulation doesn't mean that great distress doesn't mean the same thing. So in Luke 21, verse 23, someone want to read that, please. Okay, so if you were to say to somebody, there's going to be a great tribulation, or if you were to say to somebody else, there's going to be a great distress, you probably could conclude that you're talking about the same thing, because those words aren't like so far off that they could be talking about something different. Okay, so just because Luke doesn't use the term great tribulation does not mean that it's not talking about the same thing. And when you go through Matthew 24 and Mark 13 and Luke 21, parallel like we are doing, and we see that Luke's gospel uses the term great distress, he is talking about the same thing, so he is clarifying a little bit more of who the tribulation is upon. It's a great distress upon the land and upon this people. Okay, so the tribulation, when he's saying, when Matthew and Mark are calling it a great tribulation and Luke is calling it a great distress, Luke is clarifying that it's going to be upon the Jewish people. And Matthew and Mark would be talking about the same thing. They're just using the term a great tribulation upon the people.
So do you not think that that is also prophesying something that is yet to come upon the entire world?
I do not believe that because if we get a little later in Matthew 24, verse 34, he says that all of this stuff is going to happen on this generation. So everything that he wrote before that was going to come upon the generation that he was talking to.
Well, and yet we've seen that happen again and again over the last 2,000 years in various parts of the world. Mm-hmm. In Germany, for instance. Mm-hmm. Prophecy, in general, sometimes has a short-term meaning, but also a great ultimate fulfillment. Right. Like the prophecy about Jesus being born of a virgin in Isaiah, that also had a short-term fulfillment.
Sure.
For that time period.
Mm-hmm.
And so, looking at these gospel accounts, I believe some of it was, you know, there was an immediate fulfillment that happened. Mm-hmm. Jewish people. Yes. Some of it, obviously, Jesus didn't come back for everyone to see yet.
Sure.
And the whole world hasn't experienced those kinds of things yet, and so those things have to still be to come, or history would be over.
Sure.
We would have heard about it.
Right. And so I guess so it is true, it's a true statement when you say that the prophecy is fulfillment of the present time, but it's also a bigger one. And another example would be when David wants to build a temple for God, because he's, you know, God lives in a tent and I live in a house of cedar. And so he says that, you know, he says, well, Solomon's going to build it, but there's an initial fulfillment in God building that temple. But the main purpose that he was telling David there is that the main temple that he wanted was going to be the church, okay, through Christ, who is going to sit on his throne and establish his church. But so when we get to Matthew 24, So just to be clear, there are parts of Matthew 24 that have not been fulfilled yet, correct? But it's the later part of it. I don't believe that the first part, like this great tribulation here, I think that this is specifically talking about the Jewish people. And yes, as Christians, we do go through tribulation, but I don't believe there is a set time that it's going to be fulfilled in Jerusalem again for a 7-year period.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying Jerusalem. I'm just talking about the world at
large.
Sure.
Yeah, and so I think as Christians, yes, there is a tribulation that we go through, but sometimes, and as we'll get, I think it might be the next. Let's turn to Exodus 11 here real fast, and just kind of on that point there, because this specifically in Exodus 11 here talks about this great cry or distress or tribulation that won't happen again. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because just because it uses the term great tribulation and will never happen again, he is specifically talking about, I think, about the Jewish people and the nation that they had at that time, where there was, and you could say, well, Hitler murdered a lot of people too. Yes, he did, but I don't think it was nearly what happened in 70 AD and what that meant when they completely wiped out the temple, they wiped out the Levite lineage, so they knew who the priests were. That there was, they wiped them off the map, and because they rejected the Messiah. Let's read here in Exodus 11, verse 6, if someone want to read that, please.
Moreover, there shall be a great cry in all the land of Egypt, such as there has not been before, and such as shall never be again.
Okay, so he's specifically talking about the land of Egypt there. Okay, so he is saying, hey, there's this great cry that's going to happen. Or, you know, again, distress, wrath, tribulation. We're not really going to argue that there wasn't a great tribulation in Egypt. I mean, they went through a ton of things that was a trial. They lost, and then they lost all the firstborn, and eventually got plundered. It was by God for the purpose of the Israelites, but God plundered them. There was a huge distress. And so when he is saying there that there are going to be a great cry on all the land of Egypt, such as not been before and shall never be again, that's really similar language to what Jesus uses in Matthew 24 when he's talking about, and Mark 13, but when he's talking about the great tribulation, for there will be such a great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world, nor until now, nor ever shall. And when you couple that with Luke's gospel, because Luke is writing about the same thing, he is saying there's going to be this great distress upon the land and upon this people. See, again, we got to remember the audience that Jesus was talking to. He was talking to his four apostles, or a few apostles, privately, after they came and were saying, hey, look at the temple. See these beautiful stones? And he says, hey, not one stone will be left upon another. They won't be torn down. So then that leads to the question that they asked, when will these things happen? And so he says then, he goes and talks about how the temple is going to be destroyed and the things that are going to happen that lead up to that. And so the benefit of that for the Christian is, as we'll get to here in the next couple of slides, is that they're not going to be in Jerusalem when Rome comes and surrounds Jerusalem, because nobody's getting out. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't take some prisoners, but they flattened it. And so if the Christians were there, the Christians were going to be swept away as well. And that's why Jesus is warning of that. And so Jesus does talk about, like, when I come again, you're not going to have somebody say, you know, here's this guy over in the wilderness, or here's this guy up in the upper room. He is basically pointing out is that when I come again, you'll know. And that's why he gives those description of his return here prior in the early parts of the passage, because the Jews were still looking for the Messiah. So that was going to be an opportunity for the false messiahs and the false Christ, false prophets to rise up and say, hey, I am the Messiah, you know, follow me, and try and take up leading people, or people, a group of people, and lead them astray. And Christ is warning his saints, don't follow them so that you're not swept away with them. You're not led astray. And so the distress there would be talking specifically about the stress and the tribulation upon Jerusalem at the time because of the rejection of the Messiah, because they didn't believe that he was the king. They had a different picture, and that he was going to be a political leader and not a spiritual leader. Any comments before? Well, we'll keep moving on, but any comments?
Maybe, although I want to be careful because it's my first day here and I don't know what the protocol is.
We just want the truth, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think there's a warning in there for even Americans today, American people who profess to believe in God?
Well, I think that there could be a warning in there in that if we act like the Jews act, then we're going to be swept away. But I don't think it's specifically like that there's going to be a trial, like a one world leader or anything like that. I think there's definitely those people can be used as an example of how they didn't recognize who Jesus actually was and had a different picture of who Jesus was in their mind and didn't recognize that, so they were swept away.
So you don't think there's a capital A Antichrist coming?
No. And the big reason is because the word Antichrist is never used singular in the Bible.
Well, maybe not specifically, but Paul talks about in Thessalonians, you know, the one
who mad lawlessness.
Right. Mm-hmm. And again, I think these things are repeated mm-hmm. periodically, not mm-hmm. just twice, once for Israel and once for everyone, but when we look at America nowadays, mm-hmm. a country that has had the opportunity mm-hmm. to become Christian and has almost entirely rejected that opportunity at this point.
Mm-hmm.
See people who are, they may not use the exact term, I'm Christ, but for all intents and purposes, when you look at the way some people look at, mm-hmm. whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or mm-hmm. various religious leaders, and some of the things they say, I see the same patterns happening.
Right.
There are people who are, they're not happy with the true Messiah, so they're seeking a different one.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who are willing to fill that void.
Mm-hmm.
Or try to,
mm-hmm.
and we are watching a nation that is on the verge of possibly being obliterated, and it continues to antagonize Russia and whatever.
Sure.
And I think Christians should be paying attention, because there might be a time when we want to say, I don't want to live in either a big city or a place that's close to a nuclear silo, because we might get swept away with all the other people who weren't paying attention to the signs.
Right. So I do think that there's an example that we can use through that. So here, let's look at Egypt, for example. So Egypt wanted a different type of God than the true God. So they were obliterated. Babylon, which you could probably make the argument Nebuchadnezzar did come around, but his grandson took the vessels of God out and mocked him basically with his dinner party, and he was destroyed. The Medes and the Persians, Darius the Mede was concerned about Daniel when he threw him in the lion's den. Cyrus was prophesied about. But you get further on down, they were also destroyed completely. And then you have the Greeks that came. I'm not saying Alexander the Great was just a righteous guy, but they came and then they were destroyed. They sought after a different god. They had different gods than the true God. And so I think that the pattern through history is that people want to serve a god of their own appetite versus the true God. And you see that's what happened exactly with the nation of Israel too. When Jesus came to ride on the donkey and before he was crucified, they were saying he was king, but it was a king that they wanted. They wanted a king that was going to deliver them from Rome, a king that was going to come in and wipe Rome out and make the physical land peace again. But Jesus says there that they didn't recognize the time of their visitation. They didn't recognize him for who he was. And so they were going to be destroyed too. I think that's also, if that pattern still comes to America too, or to Britain, or to whatever, Germany, where there's religion there too. But the point is that they still, that the pattern through the world is that nations as a whole want to serve somebody, a god of their own appetite. And America's no different. And so that's where I think that could be used as an example, but I don't think this specifically is talking about a prophecy about America and being destroyed or anything like that. And as far as like the Antichrist, I think it'll be I think it's a couple weeks or 3 weeks probably or 4 weeks we're going to get on the specifically who the Antichrist is and go into some of those in detail. But if you look at the John's gospel, John's epistles, he never uses the term Antichrist singular. But like Paul's epistle there in 2 Thessalonians, when he talks about the man of lawlessness, that is not necessarily one world leader. I think that's talking about Christians who fall away. But we'll definitely get into that as we go further. But specifically on the Great Tribulation and the Abomination of Desolation, it's not uncommon for the Scripture to be talking and use this language to say, this is going to come upon this people. It's never happened to this people before, and it will never happen. I mean, yeah, Israel had some tribulation, and they got taken away, but not like they did with the Romans. They got wiped out with the Romans. Yeah, Egypt had some tribulation. They got wiped. God plundered them, and it never happened before, and it wasn't going to happen again. And Israel, they were wiped off the map because they rejected the Messiah. And so that's where I think that's going to lean more toward. In Matthew 24, at least the first part of it is leaning towards specifically the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the Jewish religion and nation. The second, there are parts in Matthew 24, after verse 35 specifically, that are talking about the return of Christ. Because they do ask two questions. When will these things happen? And when is the end of the age? So Jesus does answer both of them. And so the preterist view, or the post-millennial, which as you mentioned before, those who think that Jesus already come again, they only answer the first question. The premillennialists will take this stuff, and they only answer the second question. But Jesus answers both questions. And I think if we use wisdom through the Scripture, we're going to see that both questions are answered. The fall of Jerusalem is answered. And then when's the end of the age happen? Because Jesus says, I don't even know. The angels don't know. Nobody knows, but only the Father knows. And so he does answer that question.
Didn't he follow up by saying, those of you who are looking for a sign are perverse?
Right. And so that was prior in Matthew 12, but yeah. It's still the same principle.
Yeah, it's just the same principle. Mm-hmm. And I think the danger of doing that is I'm going to be a Christian today because things are getting bad, but if we just need to be ready all the time, and that's why Jesus, I think, had made that statement.
Yeah. And so I don't want to like write anybody off or any questions. Don't take it that I'm writing you off. So we were going to get to that stuff, but we just got to kind of work through some things first to kind of set some foundation first. We're going to get to the Antichrist topic and stuff like that, and the man of lawlessness topic though in the next few weeks. So. So continuing on that, go back to Matthew 24 there. So notice the right after the abomination of desolation is mentioned in verse 15. He said the great tribulation was talked about in verse 21. So I want to read verse 16 through 18, please.
Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Whoever is in the house top must not go down to get the things out of that are in his house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back and get his cloak. But woe to those to 18. Okay.
18. So what? Notice how the same language there. That he uses there, after the abomination of desolation, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Okay? And now if we go to Mark 13, Mark 13, verse 7, and those who hesitate, again, they're going to, those who, well, I see the armies coming, but you know, I love it, you know, love my city. You know, I mean, Paul writes about that in Galatians. The writer of Hebrews writes about that in the book of Hebrews, about how why are you seeking to still, you know, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but they had a tendency to try and go back to the law and the mother city or the motherland and have that mindset. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, what are you doing? Why do we go back to something that was imperfect when we have the perfect sacrifice, when it was taken out of the way, when and the new covenant was ushered in, why would we go back to that? And so the so when they're hesitating, they're going and getting their cloak, or they're hesitating getting out of there because the army's coming, and then they get trapped, they're going to be swept away. And in verse 13, or Mark 13, verse 17, so I want to read that, please. Okay, so it still does fit the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, because those who were pregnant or nursing babies, those who had things that if they got caught, it was going to be harder to escape if it was getting close. And he's warning them, and this was the reason that I think we had this written down, is because the people of the first century, when Matthew sent his letter out, or Mark sent his letter out, or Luke is, and they're seeing these things happen, they're not going to stay in Jerusalem to get swept away with that. If you go back to Matthew 24, notice another thing that he says there, verse 20, if someone wants to read that, please.
Afraid that your flight will not be in the winter or on the
Sabbath. Okay, so again, winter is going to make this more difficult to flee. I mean, this is something that if we were to have somebody putting ourselves in a situation, somebody's coming here and going to wipe us out, we would hope that we didn't have a lot of things, you know, like it's harder to take small children. It's harder when people are pregnant, when ladies are pregnant. It's harder when it's the winter. It's more difficult to flee. And so that's what Jesus is saying there, is that pray that these things don't happen when you're during this time, because it's going to be a time of great distress and great tribulation, and you need to get out of there. Notice he says that also there, that it is not on the Sabbath. Let's turn back to Nehemiah 13 real fast here. And something that should have happened on the Sabbath. And Isaiah had to rebuke some people, Nehemiah had to rebuke some people. In Nehemiah 13, verse 15 through 19, if someone want to read that, please. Nehemiah 13, 15 through 19.
Sold them to the sons of Judah on the Sabbath, even in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing you are doing, even profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do the same? So our God brought on us and on the city all this calamity. You are adding to his anger on Israel by profaning the Sabbath."
One more, please. Yes, please.
"Now it happened that just as it grew dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I said the word, and the doors were shut. Then I said that they would not open them until after the Sabbath. Then I had some of my young men stand at the gates so that no load would enter on the Sabbath day."
Okay. So if you think there for a minute there, that the Sabbath gates were supposed to be shut, or the city gates were supposed to be shut on the Sabbath. There wasn't supposed to be business going in and out. And so when Jesus is talking there, pray that it's not during the Sabbath, that doesn't mean that the Christians were observing the Sabbath. It means that the Christians who were in Jerusalem would get caught up in there if they shut the gates. Now, I don't know whether or not they followed that, if Rome let them shut the gates or not necessarily. But even if they didn't, how many times did Jesus even heal somebody on the Sabbath day and they couldn't wait to kill him? So there was going to be certain restrictions and hindrances that there wasn't going to be amongst a Jewish culture on the Sabbath day. And so Jesus is saying, you know, pray that it's not during the Sabbath. You know, pray that you don't have to deal with some of that stuff. Now, the Christians, if they were listening to Christ here, and they, I'll go back to this. If they're listening to Christ, let's turn back to Luke 21 before I make this point. Luke 21. Because the tribulation was upon Israel, and the Christians, as we'll get into the next slide, we're going to talk about how the Christians were thought of as just another sect of Judaism. Okay, but before we get there, in Luke 21, 22, and 24. Please.
Because these days of vengeance, so that all things which are written will be fulfilled. 22 and 24?
Yes, please.
Okay. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled.
Okay. So, Christians would have taken warning and fled. And if they would have lived close to Jerusalem or in the area, they would have been seeing some of these wars and rumors of wars. Okay, the famines that would have been happening before then, the earthquakes that would have happened before then. They would have been paying attention of this, that hey, Rome's coming, we're getting out of here. The Jews would have stood their ground because they still thought the Messiah was coming, because if you go to Nebuchadnezzar's dream, like we've mentioned a few times, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, God was going to set up his kingdom during the days of those Roman kings. Okay, during that fourth kingdom. You count down from Babylon, the Medes and the Persians, the Greeks, and Rome was the fourth kingdom. So the Israelites knew that God was going to set up the kingdom during the days of the Roman kings. That's why they were looking for the physical deliverance from Rome. Deliverance from Jesus over Rome. And so they would have stood their ground because they still thought the Messiah was going to be coming. But the Christians, knowing that Jesus was the Messiah and the Jews rejected him, they would have understood that there was a spiritual kingdom that he talked about, not a physical kingdom. And so they would have saw these things happen and get out of there. And so when they had things like through winter or the Sabbath, like they would have probably, if things were starting to get bad, they might have been like, you know what? We got little kids. We probably better get up here, get out of here a little bit further from Jerusalem. Okay? And I'm not, you know, saying that everybody did, but maybe there's some people who didn't faithfully trust Jesus that would happen. Maybe they stayed there and got swept away. The point is that those who were truly going to listen were going to get away and flee and take warning. And so the Christians would have took warning and fled because of it was going to be a wrath upon this people, or the Jewish people, because they rejected Jesus. Any comments before we continue on into, well, it's the same passage, but any comments on that slide? Okay, so verse 22 of Matthew 24, let's turn back there. Someone want to read that, please.
And unless these days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, these days shall be cut short.
Okay, now let's turn over to Mark 13, verse 20. Someone read that, please. Okay, so Jesus makes mention about the sake of the elect, and why the days were shortened. If we turn over to Acts 9, we're going to see get some reasons why. And we all know about how Saul persecuted the Christians. But in let's start in verse 1. Acts chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. Someone read that, please.
Blind to the way, both men and women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem.
Okay, so two things we got to understand here, or a couple things here. The Gentiles have not received the gospel yet. Not until Acts chapter 10 did the Gentiles hear the message. Okay, so prior to that, every Christian was either Jewish or, as in Acts chapter 8, they were Samaritan. Okay, but the reason Acts chapter 8 shows up is because there was a persecution of Stephen, murder of Stephen in Acts chapter 7, and then Paul breathes murderous threats against the people around Jerusalem because the church was there. That's where the church was for the first little while. They were sticking there, and so the persecution drove them out to preach the gospel to the Samaritans and other people, and just the apostles stayed there. And so Paul here, the people that he is going after, remember when God sets up the law, he says, you know, if somebody has some other god, they're supposed to purge their land. That's why they destroyed all the people of Jericho and all the people of the Amorites and so on that they destroyed, because they didn't want the influence of the false god. Okay, so as a Jew, this way, because it says there, those belonging to the way. These were Jewish people. And how Paul were looking at, they were Jewish people that believed in this false Messiah, this Jesus guy, and that's why Saul was asked for letters from the high priest to give to those in the synagogue of Damascus to turn those people in, because they were supposed to purge the land. They were supposed to rid them because of this false god that the Jews thought that this sect of Judaism, the way, the supposed sect of Judaism, the way, was worshiping. So the Jews could only purge those from whom they considered a sect. They didn't go to the temples of Artemis and drag out Christians there, because they had zero authority there. And granted, there was no Christians there at that time. The Christians at this time were just formerly Jews that became Christians. So that's why Paul is going there, and he is purging that. And we see later in Acts 24, Paul is before Felix here. In Acts chapter 24, verse 14 and in verse 22. So I want to read that, please.
Felix, having a more exact knowledge about the way, put them off, saying, "Unless the commander comes down, I will decide your case."
Okay. So Paul, in verse 14, talks about, and he's giving his defense here, and he's saying that, he says that according to the way, which they call a sect, I serve the living God. So the Jews were calling it a sect of Judaism, and the Romans would consider the way, or Christians, as just another sect of Judaism, like the Pharisees were, or the Sadducees were. Okay? And in verse 22, Felix, he had a more exact knowledge about the way, put them off, saying, "When Lystra's commander comes, I'll decide your case." So Felix heard about this. It wasn't just something that was within the Jewish community. The Romans knew about this. So the Romans, if you're a Christian living in Jerusalem at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, the Romans aren't going to say, "Oh, you're Christian, so I guess you're not Jewish." If you were a Christian, you were considered another sect of Judaism. And so the Christians would get out of there, and granted, there was persecution amongst the Christians. Paul and a lot of the apostles outside of John probably died during this time, because they were the prominent leaders of this sect of Judaism. Okay, and Paul appealed to Caesar, and we know he went to Caesar, or at least he got to his household, because in one of his letters he references, "Those of Caesar's household greet you." Okay, so Nero, when he sees this guy, and he's going to go, and Titus as well, when they're right before all this stuff's happened, these Christians are just a sect of Judaism, these people, that these rebellious people, they can't ever stop rioting, and they serve this other god instead of me in the emperor's eyes, because the emperor was the god, and so he's going to get rid of them. And so Christians would have also fallen into that category if they were in Jerusalem, and that's why there was even some of that persecution around, but that's why they were cut short, because those Christians who were the people in Jerusalem were going to be destroyed, but it was going to stop eventually. It wasn't going to extend out to the rest of the so-called sect of Judaism that's considered the way and destroy them. So the Christians would have taken warning of that. I'll back up there. The Christians would have taken warning of that, and they would have got out of there, so they wouldn't have been swept away. But that does not mean that there weren't some Christians that did get killed. Okay, because that's just the nature of a distress or a tribulation. There's probably people when Israel was taken captive by Babylon, they were probably righteous and got swept away. They're older. Not because they necessarily did something that were wrong, but because it's just how it's the nature of when a nation comes and wipes a nation out, they would kill them. And so Babylon took the young, good-looking guys to serve in the king. They weren't going to take the old guys that were about ready to die. And so it's not uncommon to think that, well, Christians, yeah, the Christians still would have had a little bit of an effect on them, because the Jews, the Romans weren't going around, are you a Christian or are you a Jew? If you were this, anything belonging to this Pharisee, the Sadducee, the sect of the way, then you were going to be wiped out. And the Christians wouldn't have been there. Most of them wouldn't have. There would have been some that would have fallen into that. But the Jews would have been the main people who were being destroyed there in that tribulation. I think we're going to stop there, Dave, but we'll open up for some questions.
Jesus talked about the elect. He wanted to cut short so some for the elect's sake, kind of, mm-hmm. which is the same as the way.
Which would be the saints, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
would be the same as the church.
Yes, yeah, the same as the church, yeah. Because the church was still, the Hebrew God, the church just kind of, in the Romans' eyes, would have just been worshiping a little bit different version of this Hebrew God, and so they would have still considered them part of that. They weren't worshiping their gods and stuff.
But Jesus was more specific when he said,
Elect, yeah. He's talking about the church there, yeah. So for the sake of the elect, the church, the persecution was going to be cut short. It was going to be upon the people of Israel because they rejected him, and they're going to be destroyed. But for the sake of the elect, because they would have been considered part of the Jews, it was cut short so they weren't wiped away.
So again, it sounds like you're saying that you believe Matthew 24:22 is over and done with.
Yes.
Well, so then how do you deal if you go to verse 29? It says, immediately sure. after the tribulation of those days, mm-hmm. the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, then will appear in heaven the sun. We haven't seen, like, the end of the world hasn't happened.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there is a tribulation yet to come, mm-hmm. because he says immediately following that, tribulation is when Jesus comes back.
Okay, right.
So there has to be a tribulation still approaching the world.
Sure. And so, and this, well, we'll get into that next week, but we'll go ahead and we'll talk about that for a second. Let's turn to Mark's account, actually, of that in Mark 13. Now, in verse 24, Mark says, "But in those days after the tribulation, the sun will be dark and the moon will not give its light, and so on. The stars of heaven will fall." And then basically it gives a description of Christ returning. Okay, so I wonder if I should go ahead. Let me just see you a second here. Let's just go ahead to this slide for right now. Okay, so Mark 13:24. But in the days after the tribulation, he will return, and we are still in the days after that tribulation. And what he is doing there is that we know from Matthew 24, verse 36, that Jesus himself doesn't know the hour or the day when he's returning. The angels don't know, and nobody else knows. And nobody else can know. If Jesus himself didn't know on the earth, then nobody else is going to know on the earth. And so if you have the tribulation that's bringing forth this the sign for his return, then you can pinpoint the return. And so when he is saying there, but in those days after the tribulation, you think about, so if we were Jews, or if we, you know, put ourselves in this, if we were a Jewish people, the nation and the religion was tied together. It was like one thing. Like, so when the apostles were asking these questions, it was like, well, our nation's going to be destroyed, so is that the end of the age? And so that was tied together. And so he is saying there is that, hey, after that tribulation, I'm going to return. I'm not just going to leave you here, kind of like, here's what could be. It's not like those postmillennial preterists are going to say that think that, well, Jesus already has come and gone, and then it's just going to, he's not going to return. He's already fulfilled. He's emphasizing that that's not the case. Jerusalem's going to be destroyed. There's going to be a great tribulation, but I still am going to return. The day after that tribulation happens, I'm going to return during that sometime there. And Jesus, when he was describing that, didn't know when he was going to return, so he couldn't tell them when he was going to return, but he knew he was going to return after the tribulation, after that the destruction of Jerusalem. Because what had to happen is the Jews had to be destroyed because they rejected the Messiah and they were competing with the church. And so after that time period then, Jesus still was going to return. Jesus still was going to return. I did fireworks for that slide, just as like, you know. But Jesus is going to return. Okay, all these slides up here a second. And he's encouraging his people to not give up hope, even though there's going to be a time of distress. Okay, and really what this slide was going to be about is it's rebutting what you brought up before, is that argument that, well, Jesus returned and it was a return on Jerusalem and it's already fulfilled. Well, that doesn't fit the picture. Jesus is giving a description of his return for his church, but he is saying it's going to be after that tribulation of those days. And we're still in those days after the tribulation. Not immediately, but Mark doesn't say immediately after.
But Matthew does.
Matthew does.
So, and not only that, but while I agree that neither Jesus nor anyone else knows the exact time, mm-hmm. he did say, and this is in Mark, from the fig tree learn its lesson. As soon as it's pregnant, it's tender, puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. Mm-hmm. Also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near. So we don't know the exact time, but he does say you're going to have signs mm-hmm. that give you an idea it's at the gates. Okay. And he hasn't gathered his elect yet before me.
Right.
You know, those things haven't happened, so there's got to be something yet to come that we need to be ready for as well. And I also just think the logic of humanity watching these things happen again and again, as not just the U.S., but all these other nations are gathering under the U.N. umbrella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is just a natural human propensity to form an empire that is contradictory to Christ's kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps happening. And if you look at maps throughout history, there'll be an empire, but the next empire is even bigger. And the next empire, like the Roman Empire, was bigger than the Greek Empire.
Right.
It's just logically speaking, there's going to be, eventually it's going to happen worldwide, where everybody just says, hey, we've, like in Psalm 2, where they say, hey, we're all joined hands against his Christ, you know, at a worldwide level, whether it's the UN or some other, you know, successor organization to the UN, everybody's going to think, hey, we got it now. We've got this figured out. This is finally, we've got the empire and one world peace.
Yeah.
And that's when Jesus is going to say, okay, finally, I'm coming back, because it's not going to ever get any bigger than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't agree with what you're saying, and I want to study it. You know, if I'm wrong, I want to study it out. But here's what I'll say: a couple things. Let's look at Mark there a second. So you have in verse 28, he says, Now learn the parable of the fig tree. When its branches are ready and become tender and put forth leaves, you know that summer is near. Even so, when these things happen, recognize that and that word shouldn't be he, because Luke references that as the kingdom of God. But well, let's leave that for a minute there. Recognize this right at the door, okay? But you take up a little bit there, and you go ahead a few verses in the context of when it says in verse 32, well, I'll start in verse 31, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. He's transitioning to his return now. But of that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven or the Son, but the Father alone. Take heed and keep watch, for you do not know when the appointed time is. It's like a man that went away on a journey. Upon leaving his house, he put his slaves in charge, assigning each a task, and coming and commanded the doorkeeper to stay on alert. Therefore, be on alert, for you do not know when the master is coming, whether it be at evening or midnight or cock crowing or in the morning, lest you become suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say at all, be on alert. So the thing is that you have two different parables there. You have the fig tree where you see the signs, and you have the parable of the man going on a journey where you don't see the signs. And even if you go back to Matthew 24, it's a little more specific. And he gives the parable, I like to call the parable of the flood. In verse 37, he says, "For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For as in those days which were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, and they were married and given into marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So shall the coming of the Son of Man be." So they didn't understand the coming of the Son of Man. If you look at both in a negative way here, where those who aren't Christians, it's going to come upon them suddenly, or Mark's account, which you could take into a positive way, is the servants be on alert and don't go asleep, because the master will come back in a time you don't even know. But it's a different parable than the parable of the fig tree, because the parable of the fig tree gives signs of when summer is near and gives signs of when it's happening. And if you notice, according to Matthew, when it talks about the parable of the fig tree, verse 32 and 33, following up with that, verse 34, he says, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." So the things that he mentioned before will had to take place upon that generation. Now, as you brought up, is that, well, you have the picture of the return of Christ. So there's two reasons why Christ would give a description of his return. One would be is to warn people of false messiahs and false Christ, because they were to say, well, he's in the upper room, or he's out in the wilderness. And he is saying, when I come, just as the lightning flashes from the west and you see it in the east, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. You're not going to have someone tell you. And then he gives here in verse 29 to 31 of Matthew 24, the second reason would be is that he is giving that to encourage them, because it was going to be a distressful time. It was, you know, when Jerusalem was wiped out, well, is this the end? What's happening? Is there any encouragement left? Hey, no, I'm going to return after that time. So keep the courage up there, because I'm going to return after that time. Now, obviously, just for the sake of time, it's hard to get into all this, and I want to get into this as well and study it. I will say, with reference to Psalm 2, that's actually talking about the crucifixion of Christ, not the end of the world. Because if you go back to Psalm 2, it's where he establishes and puts Christ on the throne when he begot him.
Just a general statement about mankind without God. Just the sure. Nature of man is to say, let's all join hands and get together, and we can defeat this God that wants us to be under him. That's just the perpetual nature of man from Adam and Eve sinning to the last day of earth.
Sure. And I don't disagree with that. One thing I will say is that according to 1 Corinthians 2, they thought they defeated God because they crucified Christ. And Paul says there, if they known that if by them crucifying him would actually fulfill, they wouldn't have crucified him. But they didn't understand that them crucifying Jesus was going to stop God. So they were united, and they thought we beat him. And because he begot him, after that, he begot him and set him on his throne. That was, they thought they were winning, but they really played into it. And so that does. I'm not saying that it can't give a picture of mankind in general as well. But what I'm saying is it just because it gives a picture of general gives a mankind picture. Just because it gives a general picture of mankind does not mean that it was specifically talking about the end of the age. I think it's talking about the Jesus being crucified there, specifically in Psalm 2. Just as in Matthew 24, I think it's specifically talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, even though we should take warning there, because the Jews rejected the Messiah of their own appetite. And if we do the same, we're going to be swept away for eternity, just like they were. And I want to...
Even now, the Jews aren't entirely swept away. They still exist. I mean, there's synagogues right here in the U.S.
Sure.
All over the world. Well, maybe not all over the world.
Right. But as a people of God, they're no longer. Because when God tore that temple, or tore the veil in two and left the temple, he was saying, I'm done.
Yeah, but they think they are.
They think they are.
They still believe that.
Right,
so that
right.
It's not like God, and God's still willing to take him back if anyone that wants
him. Sure.
While a Jew comes around.
Right. And they have to come back and have faith in Christ, though. They're not just because they're Jews, they have to have faith in Christ.
Yeah.
Just like a Muslim would be. Or an atheist would be, you
exactly.
know.
Yeah,
and
but
stuff.
I'm just saying he didn't utterly wipe the Jews off the face of the earth to no longer be in existence.
Sure.
There's
right.
some people who can trace their ancestry all the way back to, you know, presumably back to
right.
whoever, whatever tribe they're from.
Right. And that's, you know, that for sure, presumably. But what I'm saying is that the destruction that still happened, even though, yeah, there was Christians that were Jews that didn't stick around for this. So there's still going to be that Hebrew blood that was outside, that didn't get swept away. So yeah, there was, but it doesn't mean that God has any special place for the Jews. And that's what I'm saying is that the church is God's plan, not physical Israel.
You don't think he still has some plan for them?
I actually don't.
What does Paul say in Romans where he says he still loves them because of the fathers?
Right. But he says in verse 6, he says, not all Israel are those who are descended from Israel.
Right.
So the true Israel. Right.
I mean, they've still been spared.
Yeah.
It's Jewish. It's not like the Hittites where
sure.
that nation is just gone. There's
sure.
no trace of them anymore.
Okay.
I mean, the Jews are still, there's still like 15 million Jews in the world.
Right. And whether the Jew by religion or Jew by race can be different too. You know, but because I can go and say I'm a Jew. I can convert to Judaism. Doesn't mean that I'm a physical descendant of Abraham. And just because I'm a proselyte and become a Jew, I'm not a physical descendant of Abraham. And so what I'm saying is that just because there is some blood Jew still, does not necessarily mean that God has a special place for them, because he does emphasize that it's the children of the promise, which is who are descendants, not the children of the flesh. And so, but. But yes, I would like to visit with that, you know, and study that, though, too. You have a point, Cal?
Well, I would just say that I don't think that he has a plan for them physically.
Yeah.
Being that there's still Jews around, I think where they have an opportunity is to become Christians.
Right.
And so there's still, he didn't wipe out the full physical part of it, he just wiped out the spiritual part of it with the destroying of the temple and the, mm-hmm. and the lineage of the priesthood and
right.
all of that. No longer, so there's really they have a Jewish religion now, but it's not the same as it was then, because
right.
they don't have the high priest, they don't have the, mm-hmm. the priesthood, they don't have the temple, they don't have any of the stuff. So it's
mm-hmm.
not the, it's a form of it, but it's not they're not fulfilling the law,
right?
They're
mm-hmm.
or living out the law
right.
that they were intended to before
mm-hmm.
the new covenant.
Right, and it's a little different than when they taken in Babylonian captivity, because they were promise to return there, but they have no atonement for sin. They have no, like you say, sacrifice temple that they have for a couple thousand years now that hasn't happened, so they're not really fulfilling what they're supposed to in the law. Okay, we'll stop here this week and we'll pick up again next week.